This Stu Lectures episode features cook, stylist and writer Anna Jones, recorded live at the Global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2015.
Hello everyone, I'm Anna, which I think you probably actually already know by now, but anyway. Thank you very much everyone for having me here. It's just quite amazing to be in the company of some other incredible speakers and people. I don't have a big business, I don't have a product, I basically just have a story, so that's what I'm going to tell all of you guys today. And I don't do lots of talks, so you'll have to excuse me if I'm not very good with the old slides, which I've never used before, and I look at my notes a bit. So the thing that sort of came over me when I was thinking about kind of my story over the last couple of weeks when I've been kind of trying to piece this together was that I think the overriding feeling that came up at all the pivotal key points in my life was kind of instinct and intuition. And I kind of didn't know, but I've kind of been positioned here, I guess, in the company of some other amazing women. And I think that kind of instinct and intuition thing and the kind of the sense of kind of a passing on of some kind of instinct and intuition is a big thing for me. So I'm going to tell my story. I'm going to start at the very beginning. I was born the week Margaret Thatcher came to power. Coincidentally, I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor was also number one. So some seriously powerful female stuff going on this week. This is me majorly stoked about eating an apple. I have to say, though, in my early childhood, I was a lot more excited about other things like chocolate, Mars bars. I'm from a huge family. My dad's got 12 brothers and sisters. I've got 36 cousins, so it was a very, very noisy and vibrant upbringing, and food was the thing that we all kind of gathered for and sort of communicated around. Four of my uncles and two of my aunts worked at the Cadbury's factory, so chocolate was a huge part of our upbringing. I remember going around my nan's for Sunday dinner. She would literally cook for about 30 people. There wasn't enough room for everyone to sit down, so me and my sister would scooch up on a little armchair. But the most exciting thing about that was the Cadbury's chocolate sideboard that sat in the corner of the room that was filled with all the seconds that my uncles and aunts used to bring back. And I guess it was moments like that that made me realise that it was food, probably sugar at that time, and slightly greed that I was really, really excited about. And when I hear a lot of people talking about food and talking about their kind of learning and heritage, they often talk about how recipes were kind of handed down through generations and they were sort of at the stove stirring the jam pot next to their mum. And, you know, that sounds amazing and actually makes me feel a bit jealous because that wasn't the case for me at all. My mum was a bit of a feminist. She was grew up in the 60s and 70s. She was from a kind of group of women, I guess, who didn't think that cooking dinner every night was her responsibility. I think she thought it was a bit of an infringement on her liberty. So I didn't learn all my cooking from my mom. I didn't learn it from my grandma because she was too busy cooking dinner for about 75 other people. I learned it kind of myself, I guess. My mom and dad were incredible. They were nurturing. They bought me books. They bought me ingredients. They allowed me to cook the family dinner, which I'm sure was deeply rank at times. but I got the hang of it in the end. And I guess those experiences were where I really, really got into food. And when I say I got into food, I really got into it. I mean, my sister would be playing out in the garden, and this was the 80s, and I would be indoors making things like lemon mousse. I mean, what 9-year-old makes a lemon mousse? I used to frost grapes and small mint leaves to like garnish the top and then take them out to a bunch of seven-year-olds who are just like, yeah, cheers. So clearly it was this huge, huge passion for me. It was what I got excited about when I look back at all our family pictures and videos. You know, there's a level of geekery around food, which quite frankly is deeply embarrassing. But somewhere I think that passion got a bit lost. I went to school. You know, the academic side of my career was encouraged. I think I kind of, for some reason, didn't think that food and sort of, you know, the more creative side of myself was the bit I needed to follow. I kind of went down the academic route. I remember going to do my A-levels, and I think I must have had a bit of an inkling that there was this creative side that I wasn't letting out. So I went to have a chat with one of my kind of advisors, and I said, look, I just want to do something a bit more creative. And he was like, got it, we've got a new subject. And I was like, okay, great, what is it? He was like, economics. I was like, okay. So that's what I did. I did economics, which I'm sure at times can be creative. It's not known for its kind of creativity. I did economics, I did an economics degree, and I followed that kind of path, went into sort of finance and wore a power suit, which was sort of terrifying. And I guess was just in this job, but I have a really, really useful trait. And that useful trait is extreme laziness. Unless I'm completely, fully, totally engaged in something, I am absolutely incredible at doing nothing. So I was basically just drifting in this job and filling my days. It was, I mean, before Facebook, quite what I was doing, sitting at a computer for 8 hours a day. I have no idea. But I think, you know, at some point my instinct came back in and I realized that, you know, there was something else I needed to look at. So one day, on the train, on the way to work, I was reading an article, which I wish I'd kept now, because it turned out to be a really, really pivotal point in my life. I was reading an article that said, you should determine your calling or passion by the section of the Sunday paper that you turn to first. And for me, that was always the restaurant section. And that was when my instinct and my intuition kicked in. It was like, you know, it was like some fireworks had gone off in my mind and I was like, that's it. I was one-pointed about it. And, you know, that was really proof of the power of instinct and intuition, because a week later, I had quit my job and I was cooking full-time in a restaurant. It was an amazing week. I basically got to work. I Googled cookery courses in London. I found a cookery course by a largely unknown chef you guys probably have never heard of, Jamie Oliver. I went for an interview, did some weird sort of bridge building workshop somewhere in rural Wales, had a very awkward conversation with my boss about how I was leaving actually that afternoon. By the end of the week, I was cooking for a living. And I worked harder than I've ever worked, but I had this feeling, I kept thinking that someone was going to come and knock on my door and kind of burst my bubble and say, actually, you can't do this. You're cooking. You're having fun all day. You're working with mates. And one mate who actually is here over there, Eamon Fullerlove, who was my head chef at 15 and taught me an incredible, incredible amount about food. And 15 was a privilege. It was like cooking on fast forward. I was taught by some amazing, amazing people. And it was a bunch of friends, basically, who, for some reason, had free rein on a restaurant in central London and could buy the food that they wanted. You know, we were sort of sent, we went to Italy, we saw the first olive oil come off the press, and, you know, the green grassiness and the smell. You know, people were buying tunas from here to here and filleting them with machetes. I mean, it was kind of a crazy and amazing time. From there, I kind of, learnt how to cook and worked my way around a few kitchens. I worked in Spain, in Italy. In Italy, I worked six double shifts a week. in an all-male kitchen where no one spoke English and I didn't speak Italian. Reasonably challenging, but I learnt pretty quick. And I guess then there was another shift. I realised that I was cooking a lot. I realised that all kitchens weren't perhaps the nurturing kitchens that 15 had been, and not everyone was quite as nice and as nurturing as Eamon. I was going and working in kitchens where people expect me just generically to call them chef with no reason. You know, people were shouting, people were kind of just, it just didn't feel quite right to me. And I kind of knew that perhaps there was another way and another route in food. I saw Jamie's business really growing, and I kind of jumped sideways, I guess. I started working for him on his personal sort of creative team, helping him write his books, helping him with his campaigns, and doing something called food styling, which, yes, is the most pretentious job title of all time. If you don't know what it is, it's basically, you know, those chocolate fondants. Here we go. Chocolate fondants that you see on adverts with all the chocolate oozing out. That's me. So, yeah, and working for that business at that time was just the most incredible journey and adventure. I'm sure all of you know, you know, the trajectory of that business has kind of gone completely through the roof. I was privileged enough to do things like cook for the G20 leaders at Downing Street, shake hands with Barack Obama, now obviously a really close personal friend. Found myself cooking for rock stars, doing all of these things. And again, I was kind of pinching myself, just thinking, God, someone's going to catch me out pretty soon. But the most interesting side of that job for me was actually working on the campaigns that Jamie's did, the school dinners campaigns, the campaigns in America where we went to the fattest town in America and tried to make it thin. I had to actually do an American accent so they didn't know that I was one of the British crew, because at the beginning there was so much animosity. I spent 4 months living in Rotherham, which in itself was an adventure. And sort of going into houses where families were just eating doner meat every single night of the week, doner meat and chips, that was literally their diet. And I was walking in, you know, with my sort of weird southern voice and a bunch of asparagus and trying to persuade them that that was a better thing to eat. So that taught me a lot about persuasion. It taught me a lot about people, but it also taught me a lot about the situation and the food culture we have in this country. And I think quite a lot of the time we can be in a bit of a bubble. You know, I live in Hackney. You know, I am the biggest cliche. I shop in farmers markets. I'm always going out to all, you know, the local restaurants, but that's a bubble. And what my work, you know, for Jamie taught me was, is that that's not the reality in the whole country. There are a lot of people who really, you know, we think we're a nation of foodies, we all watch TV shows, but people aren't actually getting back in the kitchen and cooking. And so all of this was kind of going on, and all of this information was kind of assimilating, and I was still kind of cooking the food that I'd always been taught to cook. I was cooking in kitchens with chefs. You know, there was a lot of kind of, you know, a lot of the cooking was based around flavour. It was kind of based around kind of like, you know, sating kind of sugar, sweet, butter, all of those things. And there was something that didn't really click with me. And I guess this was another example of when I kind of had to stop looking outwards. I'd been learning about food for years and years and years, and I had learned everything you could about producers, about having respect for food, about how to cook a million different things. But I hadn't actually ever, you know, listened to my instincts and turned the other way and looked kind of inwards and tried to work out what food was doing for me. And in an attempt to know my body better and just to feel a bit healthier, and really as an experiment for 6 weeks, I decided to give up meat. It wasn't a big, conscious, moral decision. It was more just thinking, okay, I'm just going to see how this feels. And guess what? You probably know the punchline. I felt amazing. My energy went through the roof. My skin and my hair felt much better. My weight came into balance really quite quickly. And those were just kind of incidental things. But two big things happened, which changed the way I look at food and the way I will look at food for the rest of my life. The penny dropped, I guess, and I worked something out that what and how I eat defines how my body and mind feels. And how my body and mind feels defines my outlook and my attitude to the world. And I'd spent 30 years, or nearly 30 years, kind of walking around really not taking this on, you know, ever, let alone day to day or meal to meal. It felt like I kind of hadn't read the manual to my body. And it was the first time I actually started understanding, you know, what my body needed and what, you know, what instincts there were and what I could listen to. And the second thing that happened, you know, during this kind of 6 week experiment was that I fell kind of deeper and deeper in love with food. I was making new and interesting food. I was not kind of basing my plates around a piece of fish or a piece of meat. I was cooking based on feelings and moods and seasons. And I was completely enthralled and excited about food in a completely different way. I was sating my brain, my body, my emotions, but I was layering flavor. I was thinking about, you know, sweet, salty, spicy, all of those things, and putting so much more thought into each plate of food that I made. And I guess I just worked it out that with every bite of food I was eating and that we eat, you know, I was voting for how I wanted to look, I was voting for how I wanted to feel, and I was voting for how I wanted the world around me to be. And that was a massive revelation, that actually what we put in our bodies turns into the skin and bones that we walk around with. And when I had that realization, you know, it was there's been no way I could go back. So I guess for me there was a bit of a challenge there, because I found this whole new way of eating that was so important to me, but I kind of hated the word vegetarian. There's just a worthiness, a kind of sort of hemp trouser, sorry if anyone's wearing hemp trousers, kind of brightly painted sort of cafe sort of scenario that goes with vegetarianism that just wasn't something that I connected with and wasn't something that I wanted to be part of. And more than that, I just thought it was a word. You know, the way we eat is so much more than that. You know, I really believe that there's a lot to be said for nutrition, there's a lot to be said for the ingredients that go into your food, but there's more to be said for the joy of food, there's more to be said for the deliciousness of food, there's so much around how we eat and, you know, the way in which we cook and the environment in which we eat. I really, really, truly believe that a pizza and a few beers around a table with some dear, dear friends can be just as nourishing, if not more nourishing, than a green smoothie you quickly smash back as you run out the door in the morning. And I think it's trying to have that balance and focus, you know, on food and that reality about it that's really important. So I guess I'd had this kind of epiphany and this really powerful kind of change in the way I looked at food. And I wanted to share it with people. And so I used the experience that I had from writing books with other chefs for Innocent, thanks to this man Dan over here, who I wrote a book in collaboration with a few years ago. And I decided to put it all down into a book. And this is the book I wrote. If any of you have ever written a book, I thought it was just going to be this glorious experience where I was going to be like Julia Child. John, my boyfriend, was just going to come in. He was going to be like, this is the most delicious food I've ever eaten. And it was glorious and it was beautiful, but it was also bloody scary and really exposing. I wanted to write a recipe book, but I also wanted it hopefully to be a bit more than a recipe book and to be a bit more generous than that. I quite often think about food. When I think about cooking and I think about how my brain works, I quite often think about my brother. He's a brilliant musician. And when he listens to a song and when I listen to a song, we hear two completely different things. I hear the melody. If I really, really listen hard, I might hear a drum beat. And I mean, if I really go for it, I might be able to make out the bass line. Whereas Owen will, you know, he'll listen to a song and he'll hear the guitar. He'll hear the distortion. He'll hear the pedal it's going through. He might hear the amp. He'll know exactly what they've done in production. And I guess that's what I kind of wanted to communicate a bit in the books that I've written, the kind of weird stuff that goes on in my mind when I try and come up with a dish. But more than that, I wanted to make them celebratory, joyful, and I didn't want them to feel worthy and vegetarian. I'm very proud to say that my book was published, just under a year ago, and it's actually already in its sixth print run, which to me is mind-blowing because I hope my mum and dad... Thank you. And, I banked on my mum and dad and a couple of my other mates buying it, but it seems to have struck a chord, which is really, really amazing because this is my next book, which comes out next year. Flick through that quickly. But what I felt really strongly about this book was that people wanted to eat healthy food. They wanted to have more vegetables at the centre of their tables, but they didn't want to be preached to about it, and they didn't want sort of, you know, weird, bright colours or anything. I wanted this book to feel, you know, just to feel normal. I didn't want anyone to pick it up and feel like it was vegetarian. So these are some of the dishes in there. This is a pizza. The base is actually made from cauliflower and almonds. Half of you are going to think I'm totally mental, but I've served it to the biggest pizza-loving people ever, and it is deeply delicious. I'm not saying it replaces a normal pizza, but it's a nice alternative. This is a burger that I quite often make for my big carnivorous friends when they come round, and, you know, I've never, ever, ever had a complaint. This is a lovely elderflower and pistachio cake. It's made with polenta, crushed up pistachios, and coconut sugar. These are my Achilles heel. They're what I call my crack brownies. They are made with rye flour, coconut sugar, coconut milk, but they are, I have to say, deeply, deeply delicious and incredibly... Yeah, they're just exactly how brownies would be. And so this is the kind of food that excites me. This is the kind of food that I love to make. The other thing I wanted to say is that at the moment there seems to be a lot of stuff going on about healthy eating. It's brilliant. And, you know, in the last 4 or 5 years, the conversation has opened up and there are lots of people talking about it, which I think... is fantastic and amazing, but I do think that there's a responsibility that we all have to make sure that, you know, healthy eating is aligned with joyful eating and that we sort of try and take a path down the middle. And, you know, all of your talk about kind of daughters and things like that, I've kind of had the experience of talking to lots of young girls and young people who kind of get so evangelical about healthy eating that if they have a slice of bread or if they have, you know, a bite of a Mars bar, it kind of goes around in their head for weeks and weeks and weeks. So whilst I think this conversation about healthy eating and you know, having vegetables at the centre of your diet is so important, I think we need to be really, really, really measured with what we're saying. And I believe very deeply that I can't tell any one of you how to eat or what to eat. We're all completely separate people walking around with completely different biochemistry. I know that this way of eating works for me. And, you know, I'm thrilled to say that it seems to be working for a lot of people who are buying and reading the recipes. But I think it's, again, going back to this instinct and intuition, we need to listen. That's one of the things that we have stopped doing and one of the things that we need, I think, to start doing a bit more. So I guess that's it, really. You know, my story has been a bit about trusting my instincts. I think a lot of the powerful stories we've heard over this weekend have been about trusting your instincts and, whether it's kind of in the kitchen or in what you do, I would kind of encourage you to do that. So thanks very much.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favourite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.